Hey, welcome to the Monday podcast. That's Glenn and Stu, and we start right off with the socialists. That's crazy talk. The socialists in the Democratic Party, they exposed themselves like nobody's business this weekend. We have that. Also, don't forget, tonight is a special on Bernie Sanders. We get into a little bit on the podcast. But on Blaze TV, the Glenn TV button will take you right to my show at 5 p.m. Eastern. That is part two of Bernie Sanders, the people behind Bernie Sanders. And they are the radical. They make Van Jones really look like somebody that was driven by a grandma, you know, only on Sundays.
Yeah. And this is basically the stuff that you were revealing about Obama and these people around him who were saying all these crazy things publicly or in the past, but then won't admit it now. This is all this stuff times 10. And what's interesting about it is you can see them now that they're getting closer to campaign mode saying things like, well, look, we don't want socialism. We don't want collective ownership. We're not like that type of socialist. Well, they've all said that before. We have the video of it, and you'll see that tonight on TV. Glenn, it's glenntv.com, blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and save $10.
Also, a little history lesson on why it's important not to get into bed with radicals and piss off your own side. And believe it or not, our Godzilla review, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So, morning, Stu. How are you?
I'm well, Glenn. How are you? Had an interesting weekend.
I did.
So you're posting a little bit, doing a little posting on the interwebs?
No, just a couple of tweets, but apparently you can't expect anyone to actually think on Twitter anymore.
What site did you think you were logged
into? No, I know.
I'm curious as to what you thought was going to happen.
No, I know.
I am always amazed by
this. Well, I defended two people this weekend, and that's where the trouble started. Mm-hmm. I defended Stephen Crowder.
Yes.
Who, Stephen is in a war with NBC, Universal, and Vox. There's this guy who, what's he called himself? The gay geek or something
gay
like that?
Wonk, I
gay
believe,
wonk.
Yes.
Gay geek would have been better, alliteration, but, you know. Anyway, talking about the illiterate. So he was, he's in this battle back and forth, and they're making Stephen look out like a total hater. Stephen is not a hater, blah, 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 blah. And so this guy, NBC Universal Vox, went to YouTube and said, you have to investigate Stephen Crowder. He's a hate monger. And so they did. Now, Stephen has asked for people to, hey, can you look into this guy? They don't. They don't write him a personal letter.
No, of course not.
And so it is, you know, David versus Goliath. So I defended Stephen, and that was popular. Mm. And then I defended Justin Amash.
Mm-hmm.
Not popular.
No.
Now, you would think that when I say run in 2024 in that tweet, you would understand, don't run now, Justin. Please don't run now.
That seem to be part of what you said there.
Yeah.
Noticeable to me, at least.
Yes. I also don't agree with him on impeachment. He has a different point of view on it. It's nuanced. I didn't even get into the nuance of my stance on impeachment. I just said, don't agree with him on impeachment. Apparently not good enough. Apparently not good enough. You must hate Justin Amash now.
Right. Because everyone's like, oh, what are you? Are you MAGA or never Trump? Make up your mind. I don't know. Maybe neither. Maybe you just decide on a particular issue, how you feel about
Stop
something.
Stop with groupthink.
Oh,
Stop
my gosh.
With groupthink.
Isn't that supposed to be the other side?
Yeah.
Isn't collectivism supposed to be an aspect we criticize as conservatives? But no, you have to be part. We can only identify people as groups. It's like we've completely, wholeheartedly accepted and embraced every piece of identity politics, We just disagree on which identities we should be behind.
Exactly right.
What exactly is that? Right. I don't even understand it.
Oh, the British, Bridget Phetasy thing this weekend, which we also have to get through. She was hammered on Twitter, and it's like, why?
What did she do? I didn't see any of this.
She was on the podcast on Saturday.
Yes.
Right. That's enough.
But that was what she was criticized for?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're on with Glenn Beck. He's MAGA. He's a never Trumper. He's evil. He's not evil. I mean, it was crazy.
Right.
It was crazy. So I don't know. I don't know how we're going to get past this if we can't have if we can't think. See, this is what groupthink does. They just shout you down. This is it's a Alinsky tactic. Just shout people down and get them to shut up. Well, I'm not going to shut up. And if you don't understand subtlety and nuance and, you know, there are things that I agree with this person on and there are things I don't, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Justin Amash is a great conservative. He's one of the only guys, in fact, I think the only guy that actually has cut spending, not cut the rate of increase, but actually was going in to cut spending.
I believe there's five of them.
Five.
Out of the 535 out there.
Right, right.
There's five of them that have done it, and Amash has done it more than anyone else.
Right. So he went as a Tea Partier. He went in as a small government guy. That's what he is. Now, when it comes to impeachment, I think this entire thing, first let me say this. The reason why they haven't impeached him yet is because they know it will be very unpopular. There's a poll today that says that 60% of Democrats want Donald Trump impeached. I don't think that's true. If you look at they might say, oh, it'd be nice if he was impeached, but they don't want to. They're not in it. If you look at the ratings from cable news last week was a very big, hey, Democrats, we might be able to impeach him.
Yeah.
Lowest on record.
Disaster.
Yeah. Nobody's watching it. And I mean Democrats. No Democrats are watching it. They don't want it. Now, they may say they want it, but they don't want to look at it. They don't want to think about it. And of the 40%, I would bet you 35% are saying enough of this. So impeachment is just a political poison pill for the Democratic Party. I actually kind of hope that they take it because I think Donald Trump is good enough to turn that around on them as long as the economy stays strong. I think it would lead to a massive win for him. But I could be wrong, and I don't want to risk it. So I'm not for impeachment. The other thing about impeachment that people are like, there was no crime. That's the point of impeachment. Impeachment is whatever anyone wants to make it. So in other words, you don't like this guy because he's changed his hairstyle. If you could convince the American people that that's bad enough, that's a betrayal. He's had that hair ever since I've seen him. What, he's changing it now? Here the last year? He's betrayed my trust. You could make that case. Nobody's going to impeach him because the American people won't be for it. Impeachment is political. So if the people say, you know what, I'm done with him, then whatever they say is impeachable. It's political. High crimes and misdemeanors. What does that mean? Pretty much whatever they want it to mean. Remember, Watergate was going fine for Nixon. They had the hearings and everything else. It was only when they discovered the 18 minutes of missing tape that the Republicans started to say, wait a minute. Now you're editing a tape and we know who you were meeting with. Why did you edit? Where did that 18 minutes of tape go? You erased it? That doesn't look good. And it was only when the opinion of the people changed and the opinion of the Republicans changed that he was forced to resign. I'm sorry, but I don't see that happening with this president, and I don't see it happening with anything that they have on this president. It's ridiculous what they have. And again, it's not like the Democrats are making a great case for it. Most people are sick of this, and they don't think that there is anything to it. And I think Donald Trump is good enough to be able to say, I've got to go back to work for the American people, especially if the economy starts to go soft. This is where it gets really dicey and really risky. But he could make the point, these people have obstructed me from the day I got into office, before I got into office. They were marching against me. I need people I can work with. I need people who will pay attention to the country, not to this nonsense. Make it end. And I think he might actually be able to pull that off. Because nobody's watching CNN. Nobody's watching any of this crap.
And I think, I know this audience has this ability to be able to look at things in kind of a bigger picture sense. It's like, look, I think he's wrong on the impeachment thing too. If I was in, I would not be on his side of the impeachment thing if I was in Congress. However, look at the rest of what Justin Amash has brought to the table. Let me give you some of these scores. Heritage Action, he's got a lifetime 86%, which is very high. The ACU, conservative rating, lifetime rating 87.1%. Conservative Review, of course, part of the Blaze, his lifetime is 90%, most of that before it was part of the Blaze. FreedomWorks, his lifetime score from FreedomWorks is 100%. 100%. There were seven, seven out of 535 who have voted to cut spending. You've got, of course, in the Senate, only two. Rand Paul, Mike Lee, period. Mm. That's it. In the House, you have John Duncan, Raul Labrador, Griffith, Thomas Massie, who's mm-hmm. another really good one, and Justin Amash, who's actually cut it more than anyone in the entire Congress, just slightly ahead of Massie, and I know it bothers Massie.
He'd be great. He'd be great.
I mean, these things, to say that you have to throw out someone who is one of the seven people, basically, in our government, mm-hmm. who take fiscal responsibility seriously. Mm-hmm. You have to throw him out because I think he's wrong on this issue, but still, you're going to throw him out and get rid of him because of that? I mean, I don't understand. It's gonna have no impact. It's not going to affect Trump at all. Even if it passes the House, they can do it with just Democrats. If it gets past the House, it's not going to happen in the Senate anyway. It's going to do nothing. It's basically a CNN issue. I love Justin, but basically this is a CNN issue where they just get to trot out the one Republican who doesn't, who disagrees with Donald Trump on impeachment. And then they get to say it's bipartisan, right? That's all it is. But you're going to take a guy who's actually taking all of the issues that we, the Tea Party was formed on, that, conservative values have been, he's got the most libertarian voting record, I would say, in the entire Congress. You're going to get rid of that guy and target him as a big part of the problem because of one thing. It doesn't seem to make sense.
No,
he's protecting Second Amendment rights better than anybody in Congress. He's cutting spending.
We can't be a one-trick pony. So we need to be able to say, you know what? That's his strength is right over there. I completely disagree with him on this. I mean, I don't agree with everything my wife says. My wife is like, no, we're not going to. Oh, my gosh. Trying to watch television in my house is such a nightmare. Trying to watch anything in my house is such a nightmare. Have you seen Good Omens? Good and Bad Omens or something like that. It's a new one on Netflix. And my son and I started watching it last night. And it's an angel and a devil that have been there since the Garden of Eden. And they don't want to admit it, but they both love Earth. And they're just kind of digging the whole Earth thing because you can have food and everything else. And they're really liking it. And so they're supposed to bring in the Antichrist. And they're actually both kind of working together to make sure the end of the world doesn't happen. It's really funny. Very, very clever. My wife was like, I don't know if I like this. I don't know if I like this. It's like, oh, geez, for love of Pete. We would be divorced if I had to agree on everything between what we watch on television, where we go on Friday nights, and the frickin' temperature of the house. We would have killed each other. Since when are we supposed to agree with absolutely everything somebody says? You know what? Some people are right more than they're wrong. But no one is right 100% of the time.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and you're listening to the Glenn Beck program. If you like what you're hearing on this show, make sure you check out Pat Gray Unleashed. It's available wherever you download your favorite podcasts. We're just watching Trump take a tour of Buckingham Palace in the picture gallery. And I don't know about anybody else. I mean, I don't think we need the wall-to-wall live coverage on every station of him looking at pictures with the Queen. I mean, I don't want to look at pictures, you know, with my own family, let alone look at people looking at pictures. But it is important because it shows that she is... I don't want to infer that she's embracing him, but she's not...
The Queen? Yeah. She's. They seem to be... getting along really well.
Really well, which is a great message for the Queen to send. But there's a couple of things. This, what's her name? Merkel?
Meghan Markle.
Whatever.
Yeah, Meghan Markle.
Trump did not call her nasty.
Right.
He said, right. I didn't realize... she had gotten so nasty, meaning I didn't know she had said all those nasty things about me.
Right. That's in the context of what she said about him.
Right. If, not her.
If he had wanted to say she is a nasty person, he would have said it that way because that's what he does.
No, I don't think so.
I think he would. He does all the time. When he thinks somebody is nasty.
He is not that polite. If he thinks you're nasty, he'll tell you. Not that polite.
Right.
He would have called her something much worse than nasty. when I read that, I thought...
obviously that's not what he meant.
My first thought was, why would he say that she's nasty? I can't imagine the context where he's going to England and he says that.
Right.
So then I read the article. That's not what he said.
And when you listen to the to the audio, it's like, that's clearly not what he said. Not the context.
Do we have that audio? Sarah, do we have it? It's not what he said. And for the press to turn and turn that in, there's not an honest one among them.
Not at all. The headline on CNN this morning was, Trump insults his hosts on his way to meeting or something. Trump insults his hosts? You didn't even mention that Sadiq Khan... the mayor of London started calling him a fascist before he even got there. Trump insults his hosts. Amazing. It's amazing how they spin this.
The other thing that drives me nuts is every time Melania goes out, she looks remarkable. She is
absolutely beautiful.
Beautiful.
I mean, she's supermodel beautiful.
Right. And she is so tastefully dressed.
Yeah.
You hear about the royals and the Obamas and everything else about...
Michelle's arms. What about her arms?
Incredible
arms.
And constantly of who she was wearing and who's this and who's
always.
That. Nothing about this woman.
They never mention her.
She is Jackie Onassis, beautiful and classy.
I think beyond Jackie Onassis. I think she's more beautiful than Jackie Onassis was.
Jackie Onassis is, she's just the epitome of the American first lady that was beautiful and
classy.
Had great taste.
Until
and was really
you had a supermodel who was first lady.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's not even fair. Not fair to compare Melania to anybody else who's been first lady because there's never been anyone even close.
But
you're forgetting about Eleanor Roosevelt.
True. Well, who's Taft's wife? She's probably pretty high.
Well, standing next to him,
yes.
I mean, you look at her, and it's not that she's just beautiful. She's elegant.
She's incredibly classy.
And for them to never acknowledge, again, not an honest person among them. Not one.
Right, because that I always think that is the most pure example of bias. Like, you can say all you want that, for example, you can say, look, yes, we give Donald Trump a hard time on his immigration policy. That's because it's wrong, and he's hurting people. Okay, you want to say that? Whatever, you could say that. Obviously, I don't agree with it, but that's a political disagreement, and you can at least come to the point where you're saying, yes, we're being tough, but we're being tough for what's right in the end.
Correct.
This is just a straight beauty question. You freaking praise Michelle Obama like she looked like a supermodel. Now you have a supermodel and you don't even acknowledge it. No covers of fashion magazines. No wonderful spreads in the style section of the Washington Post.
Nothing.
She's just invisible
to
everybody.
When she went to Africa, they were actually making fun of her outfit and claiming how colonialist her outfit was. She looked like she had walked off a Ralph Lauren fashion shoot.
This is a woman who was born under the thumb of the Soviet Union. What do you mean she's colonialist? She was devastated by huge governments taking over countries.
It's just absolutely crazy what they do. And it, again, I go back to my McDonald's fry thing. You can say whatever you want about McDonald's. You're probably right. Their food is plastic. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. But if you can't admit that their fries, before the government made them change the recipe, their fries are the best fries made. They're just fantastic. You can hate on McDonald's all you want. You can even say their fries might be made out of lead paint and baby children. I don't know. But it's still, you have to say, but that baby leg in the shape of a fry, best fry I've ever had. And if you can't admit that, you are not an honest broker. We have the audio. Here's Donald Trump on what he said that the press is saying he called
Meghan Markle
nasty.
Meghan, who's now the Duchess of Sussex. Right. We've given her a different name. She can't make it because she's got maternity leave. Are you sorry not to see her? Because she wasn't so nice about you during the campaign. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't know.
Listen to how he tries to provoke.
No, I hope she's okay. I did not know that. No.
She said she'd move to Canada if you got elected. Turned out she moved to Britain.
Well, that would be good. I mean, there are a lot of people moving here. So what can I say? No, I didn't know that she was nasty.
Is it good having an American princess then, Mr. President?
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, because he even frames it as nice. Like, he gives the other side of it.
I didn't know that.
Never heard him so nice.
Yes.
Somebody who is, this is as good as Donald Trump ever gets.
I mean, that's absolutely statesmanlike for Donald Trump, right? I mean, and honestly, for anybody. I mean, to say that someone's highly critical of you, all you can say basically is, look, of course they have their opinion. And, I didn't realize they said those things, but, you know, whatever.
And like, usually he doesn't do that.
No. Never.
Usually he lashes back out, but he didn't at all here. He's like, I didn't realize she said something that nasty. I didn't know she got nasty about me.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Again, the press, tries to get in their gymnastics sort of contortions to try to figure out a new thing they can say that's bad about this guy every day. It's like, just pick the ones that actually are bad. If you find something that is actually bad, then do that. You don't need to have a new alert on the bottom of your screen all the time with whatever Donald Trump just said. You know, that was like the same thing that happened at the end of last week where they're like, Donald Trump seems to say that Russia helped him win the election. And you read the tweet, and he absolutely did not say that. It's absolutely ridiculous for anyone to think that he said that. He's talking about how everyone else was discussing the election. That's all he was doing.
I think
they don't even care.
I think this, again, goes to let him do it. Let him just keep doing it. He's winning the battle against the press. He's winning it. Look at the number of people that believe in the press. It's, what is it, 7%?
Yeah, something really low. I think people like cockroaches better than they do the press.
Literally.
I think so, yeah. And it's interesting to watch the press implode and the Democrats implode. You know, you've got them falling all over themselves to make Trump out to be the devil. And then you've got Democrats embracing socialism. This couldn't be set up any better for Donald Trump for 2020. Couldn't be any better. I mean, if a socialist is elected in the United States of America in 2020, then we get what we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think so either.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's... And it's not that... It's not that it takes a lot of thinking. I mean, listen to... Here's Gildebrand. She was on with Chris Wallace in a, you know, town hall kind of thing. And he said, look, you want to pull guns off the street, but anything you're proposing wouldn't have stopped the Virginia shooter. Now, listen to this.
Your campaign slogan is Brave Wins.
Yep.
But when you were a congresswoman representing a conservative district in upstate New York, you took pretty conservative positions on guns and immigration. Once you became the senator for the entire liberal state of New York, you flipped and took much more liberal positions on guns and immigration.
Oops.
So,
right.
How is that brave?
It's because I came from a district that was really rural. Second Amendment was important. Hunting was important. My mom, of course, she cooked the Thanksgiving turkey, but she also shot the Thanksgiving turkey. So I understand the importance of having a hunting culture and preserving our Second Amendment rights. And that's why I'm in the best position, Chris, to lead this country into a place where we can have common sense gun reform.
Okay, so common sense gun reform. Play the next clip, please.
Didn't answer the question, though.
Common sense gun reform. Listen to this.
I heard the 3 points you specifically made. Having said that, none of them would have prevented what happened in Virginia Beach. This gentleman, he didn't buy an assault weapon. He had two handguns. He bought them legally. So how do you prevent? I understand that all of your plans aren't going to stop all of them. But is there anything you could have done that would have stopped this terrible incident?
Yeah, stop being beholden to the NRA like President Trump is.
NRA?
That's the dumbest answer I've ever heard.
So stupid.
First of all,
it's not an answer.
How about the stat on just Bloomberg's organization?
Michael Bloomberg has an anti-gun organization, as you may know. He spent 50% more in the 2018 election than the NRA did. Just his organization spent 50% more in that election than the NRA.
So stop being beholden to the NRA. How is that solving anything? How is that solving anything?
She has to know it isn't, right?
Right.
She can't be that stupid.
She goes on to claim that they don't care about, they care about money. They don't care about children. They don't. Have you met NRA? Was your mom an NRA member? By the way, I don't believe that your mom went out and shot the turkey, too. Maybe it's true. I just don't see it.
But that's a terrible answer, too. Like, well, the reason why you think I flip-flopped is because when I was in a conservative district, then I voted conservative, but now I'm not, so now I'm voting liberal.
That's essentially what you said.
That's what he accused you of.
Right.
That's not yours. That's supposed to be your excuse.
So your answer is, yeah, you're exactly right.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. So let me play the audio of a Bernie activist. Now, this is a video that was just put out this last week from the campaign on what Bernie Sanders says democratic socialism really is.
What democratic socialism means to Bernie is having a government which represents all people, not just the very wealthy. Democratic socialism is making sure that all of our people have healthcare as a right, education as a right, housing as a right, and childcare as a right. That's what Bernie believes. For Bernie, democratic socialism does not mean that government should own the means of production. It means that the middle class, the working families, and the working people who produce America's wealth deserve a fair share of it. These lies have happened before. In 1965, when President Johnson passed Medicare and Medicaid, conservatives like Trump attacked these programs as a socialist threat to our American way of life. We can look at the example of countries like Denmark, Finland, and Sweden, where working people came together to make sure everyone benefited from the wealth being generated and all people are guaranteed healthcare, a good education, and the ability to take care of their family. But this isn't just Europe. Both Costa Rica and Colombia guarantee healthcare to their citizens with almost no copays or deductibles. Both countries' healthcare systems have been ranked higher than the US. Donald Trump partners with war criminals, rips babies from their mothers, and puts children in cages. While Trump lies, Bernie asks the important questions, like,
why do we have grotesque levels of income and wealth inequality? Why are millions of people leaving school deeply in debt? Why do we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth? Why do we have more people in jail than any other country?
Okay, stop.
Why do women...
Stop. I love his questions because they're interesting questions. Just all of his answers are wrong. Why do we have so many kids in poverty? Why do we have these problems? Do you know we're $22 trillion in debt right now? Do you know how much we have spent on the war on poverty since Johnson? Just $22 trillion. We've spent $22 trillion on eradicating poverty, and poverty is right where it's always been, and we're now $22 trillion in debt. There's a question for you, Bernie. Why? Because it doesn't work. You say that he believes that democratic socialism represents all people, not just the rich. Okay. Well, people, all people want to be represented, right? Everybody should be represented. And we should be represented equally. Equally. The problem is if you have 1%, 1%, if in bed with all the politicians, can control everyone else. But 1%, if it's not in control of all the politicians, can be easily deemed the target, the scapegoat, and you can round them up and do whatever you want with them. That's why we believe all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, meaning you have this right and no one can take it away from you. See, our government is different than all other governments ever conceived by man. Our government said there are rights that the people start with, and the job of the government is just to protect those rights. Where what Bernie Sanders is saying, all people have the right, according to her, to health care. All people have the right to child care. All people have a right to education and housing. If housing, education, child care, and health care are all a right, then the government must ensure that everyone has that. Everyone. No matter what you do, no matter you work, you don't work, well, it doesn't work that way. Because once you ensure all of those rights, you then have to pay for all of those rights. And you could take all of the money. You could just take all of the wealthiest 1% and shoot them in the head, take all their money. It doesn't cover the cost of all of this. So then what do you do? Well, you have to take then the remaining 4% of the top 5% and shoot them all in the head and take every dime and everything they have. It still doesn't cover all of this. And by the way, once you've done that, you've also stopped the production of new money. It'd be great if we could just pay for everything once. Just take everybody's money away and just pay for it once. How do you pay for it tomorrow? You have to have the free market. But once you start taking the money away from the people who are actually responsible for making most of the money, well, then you have a problem. Because who's going to get up and put up with all the crap? Who's going to go to medical school? Seriously, who's going to go to medical school, lose that amount of money, lose that amount of sleep, dedicate their life, spend half of their life just trying to get into being a doctor? then they're a doctor. Then you don't let it pay off for them? You don't let them have a nice life for what they've sacrificed? See, that's the deal. People sacrifice. Not all people do. Some people born into wealth, they piss it all away. Whatever. It's their right. You can't have all of these rights and ensure the rights of the Constitution and Bill of Rights. You can't have free government health care, because it's not free, universal child care, universal education, universal housing as a right and continue the Bill of Rights. Because those two things are in conflict. The biggest thing it's in conflict with is you're going to get the tax-paying 50% of the country saying, I don't want this. You're going to get those who believe in the free market saying, I don't want this. What are you going to do to them? Because they got to be an enemy of this utopia, right? I mean, we'd be able to do it if we could just get them to come along with us. Well, if they won't go along, what are you going to do? Well, you have to first silence them and alienate them. Then you have to dehumanize them. Then you really have to start shoving them. Then you have to start silencing them. How far are you willing to go? See, this is why the American system has lasted this long. Because how far are you willing to go for somebody else's right? I'm willing to stand with anybody. I don't have to fight, because if my philosophy is you do what you want, just don't tell me what to do. You do what you want. That's why it was so easy for me when everybody said you're against gay marriage. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Never have been. Never have been. For it. Why? Because I believe that's your right to conduct your life the way you see fit. Now, don't tell me what my church can and cannot do. Don't tell me what I have to believe, because I'm not telling you what you have to believe. Don't tell me. I don't want the government involved in any of these things. That was the American system. Neighbors would work it out. Towns would work it out. States would work it out. And the federal government would guarantee the rights. It would be the protector. Wait a minute. These certain rights are guaranteed, and we are never to violate those things. That's the way it worked. Now, Bernie Sanders, he can tell you that, you know, healthcare is so great elsewhere. Well, healthcare is good in the Netherlands because it's a free market system. Yes, they have socialized medicine. But socialized medicine and all of this medicine, it's all falling apart. You know why? Because that used to be countries full of nothing but white people. And white people who had exactly the same heritage. There was no diversity. And so it was very easy to get a small country to agree that all of the people that they're pretty much related to, they can share. Okay, well, that's what they decided to do. It's part of their culture. But now that they have new people coming into their culture that don't want to behave like the rest of the people in their culture, it's starting to fail. We are the most diverse country ever on the face of the earth. Ever. We're something entirely different. We have to learn how to live with one another and not force each other's points of view and lifestyles down each other's throats. Because that's what Europe used to do. That's what Europe still does. You'll do it this way. Oh, you weren't born into this family? You don't have this connection? You're not a member of the knighthood of whatever? Oh, then you can't do that. You're not a member of the union? Oh, well, you can't work. That's anti-American. Not un-American, anti-American. The idea in America was you don't have to, you could start whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Don't violate other people's rights. I ask you, if you're on the other side of the rights argument and you say you want all of these things, you have 50% of the country that's not going along with you. What's your plan? Let's say you win everything. What's your plan? How are you going to get the other 50% of the country on your side? Because they're not listening to you. They don't believe you. They don't want it. They vehemently disagree with it. What are you going to do? Answer that question. Bernie, I know you ask a lot of questions. I'd like an answer to that one. What is it you're going to do with the half of the country that wants nothing to do with universal everything and democratic socialism? Do you remember when we thought the Center for American Progress was the center of all that was unholy?
Maybe they're not the center now, but you're not saying they're that far from the center.
Yeah, I mean, they're the Center for American Progress. They're the ones that did all the spending bills for Barack Obama. Remember that? What was it? 2,000-3,000 pages. It was just this enormous stack. And I remember seeing it the first time, and it was for not the bailout, what came after it, the
stimulus
package. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking in and I said, and Barack Obama had only been in office like 2 months. And I said, who wrote this bill? Because there's no way a bunch of guys who just came off an election wrote this. This has been in the works forever. Who wrote this bill? Well, as it turns out, it was the Center for American Progress. And it had all kinds of things, cash for clunkers, all of that stuff came for Center of American Progress. That's a George Soros, Hillary Clinton kind of place, all right? That is now at war with the other side of the Democratic Party. They're the conservatives of the Democratic Party now, okay?
Yeah.
That's the old guard, is Center for American Progress. And I want to show you how this is morphed into something very, very dangerous, and it is Bernie Sanders and his campaign that is on the other side of Center for American Progress. All right. John Podesta, good friend of Hillary Clinton's, right? George Soros, Center for American Progress, all friends of Hillary Clinton. So it wasn't really a surprise when the Center for American Progress came out and said, oh, yeah, you know what? Hillary Clinton's, she's our gal. No. However, when they did that, they assumed that everyone at the Center for American Progress was a friend. Now, Center for American Progress put together a website, their news site, called Think Progress. Now, Think Progress is as lefty as they come. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
At least we used to think that they were the most left. I guess they're not anymore.
No. They're not anymore. But the Center for American Progress had their chief editor for the website, Think Progress, go and interview Hillary Clinton. This is back in 2008. And in the interview, the interviewer, the chief editor, asked her about her support for the war in Iraq. Well, that wasn't supposed to happen because that was one of her Achilles heels. That was one of the things she didn't want to talk about. So who is this guy at the Center for John Podesta? Did you not know? Did you not tell him, hey, we're on friendly territory here? That's one of the biggest things that's coming out against me. What are you doing to me? Well, that's exactly the question that the lead Hillary person had for the interviewer. In fact, went and punched him in the chest after the interview and said, what the hell were you doing?
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Steven Crowder is being targeted now on YouTube, and he's being targeted by NBC, Universal, and Vox. Vox has this radical guy who calls himself Gay Wonk. And so he, you know, Steven Crowder, he's a comedian. He's making fun of the way this guy talks and being gay and everything else. Yes, it's politically incorrect. It's pretty funny, but politically incorrect if the guy doesn't have a problem with, you know, shouting from the rooftops, hey, this is who I am. Okay, well, you know, if that's who you are, that's totally fine in real life. But if a comedian's going to get a hold of you, he's going to make fun of you. And, ooh, did you get your feelings hurt? Wow, it sucks, doesn't it? Get over it.
Actually, he was cyberbullied, Glenn. That was cyberbullying. And feelings were hurt.
What was it that he was doing to Steven Crowder?
What do you mean?
What if it's not?
Nothing.
Oh, nothing?
Nothing.
Really?
He was doing nothing to Steven Crowder, who was completely guilty, and everybody at NBC is completely innocent. That's what always happens in these situations. Like, for example, it's completely fine for the Daily Beast to go in and find a guy who posted a video of Nancy Pelosi speaking slowly, who's just a working class guy who's a Trump supporter in New York, not really part of the media at all. He's got a couple of small Facebook pages. They can expose him and give all his personal details, all of his post history. They can dox him from here to, and they can go to Facebook and ask Facebook for details of his postings, and the Facebook will give those details to the Daily Beast over this guy that nobody's ever heard of in the entire, you know, in the entire world. Is basically, and he's an unknown, he's a total unknown guy, and he posted a video that really is not, it is not even part of the discourse. It's just a Democratic talking point, the idea that it's a big deal. You can criticize Giuliani for posting it and not knowing. But the idea that the person who posted this video did anything consequential to the United States is completely ridiculous. And they'll go and they'll dox him and they'll go through his entire history and act as if he's running for president. That's okay. But God forbid you actually go after a public figure and you make fun of him, that's enough to just overturn your entire account. I mean, that is an insane standard. Insane.
So it's not a standard. It's what they're just doing today.
Yep, what they're doing today.
And they'll do something else tomorrow if they want to and they feel it'll help them. That's why we ask you to join the blaze. We are trying to give you the truth. We're trying to uncover the stories that no one else will. I don't know anybody else who has done this extensive of work on a couple of these candidates, Bernie Sanders being one of them. And this is really only the beginning. I mean, literally, we could do shows all summer long, just on the people around Bernie Sanders. I think we could do it all summer long and still have you by the end of August going, well, you got to be kidding me.
To be fair, he's been around for 147 years. There's right. A lot of people who right. have surrounded him.
Right. No, but I mean the ones that are currently surrounding. Mm-hmm. Tonight, we're going to show you more. You can watch that show on Faiz right now on demand at Blaze TV, and then at 5 o'clock, make sure you're watching tonight's episode because we will show you the rest of the people, or some of the rest of the people that are around Bernie Sanders that should make America go, wait a minute. If he's surrounded by those people, what are his actual policies if he gets elected? Did you see the person that marched up on stage? This weekend, this guy had his hair in a bun and he was like, I want everybody to listen to a bigger picture here, and took the microphones away
from Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see that?
Unbelievable.
I want to talk about that because we're entering a new time and this is played out over and over and over again. And Kamala Harris and everybody on stage actually did the right thing the way they treated him. And they treated him at first with respect, and that was the right thing to do.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to show you the civil war that is happening in the Democratic Party. The Democrats decided to play fast and loose with people's emotions. And they have promised them that the moon is Stilton and that she is Dutch and pigs have wings and horses can fly. They've promised them all of these things. When they realize, wait a minute, you didn't really mean any of those things, they're going to turn. And they already are. Now, we played the audio of Kamala Harris on stage. Let me play it again for you real quick. She's on stage this weekend, and she's having a conversation on Move On stage. And somebody who likes global warming decided that's not far enough.
Of your first big idea on the gender pay gap. Not everyone works for a corporation.
Yes.
And a big... Hey.
The guy could have, if it wasn't for the man bun, the guy could have just gone up on stage and just killed her. If he had a gun or a knife or something, he could have killed her. He walked right up to her.
I mean, he could have killed her with his bare hands if he didn't have a man bun and had no ability to do such things.
Right.
Okay. I mean, but thank God.
Right. Thank God he was genderless. Anyway, so this is a sign of things to come. How many times have we seen people on stage in Seattle? Even Bernie Sanders is on stage and radicals take over. And they're not the Bernie Sanders of the world or any of these politicians, not radical enough. If you want more evidence that things are really kind of out of hand on the radical side, if anybody actually believes that the Democratic, the people who are really involved in this process are not total radicals. I want you to listen to what happened this weekend in California. First, let's play Hickenlooper. He says he's against socialism. Listen to this.
If we want to beat Donald Trump and achieve big progressive goals, socialism is not the answer. I was reelected in a purple state in 2014, one of the worst years for Democrats.
Okay, stop. Now, let's listen to Democrat John Delaney, also running for president. He says something similar.
But we need, as Democrats, to build an economy that works. But it's got to be with smart policies. Medicare for all may sound good. But it's actually not good policy, nor is it good politics. I'm telling you. We should have universal health care. But it shouldn't be a kind of health care that kicks 150 million Americans off their health care. That's not smart policy.
Boo! Okay. So both of them were booed because they both said, don't shut down private insurance. Don't take over the means of production. You got that? Don't take over the means of production. Don't let the state run everything. That's who these people are. Now, let me go back to Kamala Harris. The reason why I led with that is the guy coming up on stage. There's one president that we lost. And we lost because he thought the guy who killed him thought that the president was a real radical. And now this guy was also a little nuts, but don't you have to be to kill somebody else? Don't you have to be to kill a president?
Usually part of the ingredients in the recipe.
Yeah, you're a little nuts. So this guy, and I don't remember what it was, but he wrote to the president's people and said, hey, I've got this idea and this will help you win. And he heard the president use similar kinds of things. And there's no evidence that he took this guy's idea, But this guy thought, that's me. And so the president's going to love me when I come down and I see him because I gave him the winning strategy. And I've got some more stuff for him. And I know he's going to reward me. And I want an ambassadorship to, like, I don't remember where it was. So he goes into the White House and he demands a meeting. And he gets one with the then, you know, equivalent of the chief of staff. He just gets one because nobody knows what to do with him. And so the chief of staff comes out and he's caused all kinds of problems. And the chief of staff says, well, you know, what is the deal, dude? He's like, hey, the president used my philosophy. And he's like, the president didn't use your philosophy. He didn't. Well, he's going to want to appoint me. He's going to want to meet with me because he's going to want to appoint me to an ambassadorship because I really helped him. He's like, dude, the president doesn't want to meet with you and he's not going to give you an ambassadorship. And no. Well, the guy left and he felt as though this president was a fraud. And he had to be a fraud because he said all these things and now he's either denying that I helped him, which I know that he did, or he's sending these bullies out. And you can't have bullies like this on your team if you're a good person. So he shot the president. The president died. The president was McKinley. He was shot by a fan. The Democrats have gotten into bed with people, and what we're creating now is exactly what we warned about years ago with the French book, The Coming Insurrection. The progressives decided that they would bring in the Marxists, the communists, the revolutionaries, the anarchists, and that they would use them to be able to further their agenda. Well, they have used them, and those people know they've been used, and they were used willingly. But we want now the price of us being used. We want something in return. And what they're getting is more politics that are the same. They're seeing that it's going to be a Joe Biden, which is basically to them a Hillary Clinton. Kind of meant that way to me, too. But that's not what they want. They want an end to the free market system. They want an end to this oppressive country. And if the Democrats don't continue to play nice and give them many things that they want. I mean, I don't know how long it lasts. In France, it's lasted really since for about 30 or 40 years it's lasted. And I don't think it's going to last that long here. Everything's on a hyperdrive scale. And when they say, you know, we've had enough. I mean, listen to that reaction of that crowd. If the message of the Democratic Party is, okay, we're not going to take away your health care, one of two things is going to happen. One, the radicals believe that they're only saying that because they're a politician and they just have to get elected. But every time they've heard that kind of talk and they've said, well, let's keep quiet because they're going to do these things, they never do them. They move, but they never do them. So they're either going to say, this person is just lying and he's on our side, wink, wink, nod, nod, he's going to do these things, which if he doesn't do them when he is in the Oval Office or she is in the Oval Office, then she's even in more trouble. Or they're going to say, like the Republicans have started to say, I'm not a Republican anymore because you guys are full of crap. You don't do anything you say you're going to do. But the problem is, when it comes to the Republican, that usually means it's a family standing there, with their picture of Ronald Reagan or whoever. And they're like, you guys are betraying. We wanted lower taxes, and they're not going to chop your head off. They're not going to build a guillotine, and they're not going to put fences up and throw smoke bombs and everything else. That's not what they are. The left has embraced those who do those things and like to do those things. Once they cross the Rubicon with that, and they are at the bridge. I don't know if even they're on the bridge yet, but they are at the bridge, ready to cross the Rubicon. They may be on the bridge, but once they cross it, the Democrats as we know it are over. And our world changes, at least for a while. Our world changes.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.